Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to this week's episode of The Liberty. I'm your host, Caleb Franz. This is the voice of liberty for a new generation. I'm thrilled to have you here this week. This week, we are bringing on another Young Voices advocate. His name is Elias Atienza, and he wrote an article in Yahoo News about Venezuela and the proper response to the ongoing crisis that's occurring there. There's a lot of discussion about either using everything from using military force to bringing on more humanitarian and foreign aid. And Elias takes a separate approach, one that kind of flies in the face of President Trump's immigration policies, but it's one that is much more effective than either of the two priorly mentioned solutions. So without further ado, I'm going to let you sit back and listen in to this episode of Liberty with Elias Atienza. Real quick, though, before we do, I do want to note that next week, on the week of Thanksgiving, we are going to be releasing our first advocacy project with the Liberty Initiative. Now, there's going to be more information about that coming out within the next couple of days, and certainly by Monday, so please be on the lookout for that. And of course, you can find all information about that on social media, on the MiLiberty.com website, and so on and so forth. So please look out for that, because it is going to be an exciting program that we have in development. So without further ado, please sit back and enjoy my interview with Elias Atienza about the crisis in Venezuela. Elias, welcome to MiLiberty. I am thrilled to have you here.
Thrilled to be here, Caleb.
So I am bringing you on because I've spoken with Stephen Kent, and we have a very good relationship with Young Voices advocates, which you are one, and you have written in Yahoo News about Venezuela, and it's titled "Venezuela's Crisis is a Policy Opportunity in Disguise." As we start here, can you give us a brief overview of what you were writing about and what you were trying to convey in this article?
So, Venezuela currently is undergoing a refugee crisis. Thousands of Venezuelans are fleeing their country into different the neighboring countries, whether it's Colombia, Brazil. All over Latin America, there's it's basically a refugee crisis that is on the scale of what happened in Europe. And the whole point of my article is that we can essentially kill two birds with one stone. We can accept refugees from Venezuela, and we can also push for legislation that allows for private citizens to sponsor refugees to come to the United States.
So one of the things that you mention in it is you talk a little bit about sometimes Trump has desired to invade Venezuela as somehow a solution to their problems. Can you go into a little bit why that's not necessarily the greatest decision, including obviously there's no real national security threat, but also there's a lot of bad things that can also happen from it, as we have seen in other countries.
Well, first off, the history of United States intervention in Latin America, whether within the last 30 years, whether that is Grenada or Panama, those were all small countries that didn't really have the population or the military the size of Venezuela. It's not saying that Venezuela can put up a great fight against the United States military. The U.S. military has a long history of steamrolling over pretty much anyone with a smaller military. But Venezuela is seven times the size of Panama's population. It's geographically twice as big as Iraq. And it took hundreds of thousands of troops to invade Iraq, quote-unquote stabilize it. And it would be essentially a rebuilding project the size of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And the United States neither has the treasure nor the ability to basically rebuild Venezuela like they tried to do in Iraq and Afghanistan. And there's no guarantee that Maduro's partisans will even accept U.S. rule. In Colombia, there was this far-left group called FARC that has fought against the Colombian government for decades, and it's only recently that a peace treaty was introduced. It's not necessarily a peace treaty, but like a ceasefire, and that's a real possibility that could happen in Venezuela as well.
You mentioned that in this, that's one of the ideas that is obviously better than something like an invasion, but it's one that certainly the Trump administration is going to be critical of, is resettling refugees. And he obviously said in your article, you quote him saying that America should not become a, quote, migrant camp. Can you explain a little bit why this is, one, it's not necessarily the same as, like, say, a Syrian refugee situation, and two, why that should not really matter too much, especially in the context of this, and it's certainly a better option than say going to war over it.
Well, the United States, in absolute numbers, I think, accept more refugees than anyone else. However, that's because we're one of the largest countries in the world. I mean, I think only China and India have larger populations than we do. And when you compare it from rates of acceptance, 49 countries have greater rates of acceptance of refugees than the United States, according to the Cato Institute. You've got countries such as Lebanon and Jordan, which are in the Middle East and are in the middle of religious conflict, sectarian divides, and, you know, with the rise of terrorist groups such as ISIS. Yet these countries accept refugees all the time. They have refugee populations that are staggeringly big to their population size, and the United States obviously has a role to play in the destabilization of these regions, whether it's a history of intervention in the Middle East, which is called through the Iraq or Afghanistan war. The United States, I believe, has the moral high ground to accept these refugees. If you break it, you buy it sort of policy, cause instability, you should try your best to alleviate some of the suffering that these people have gone through. Now, that's not necessarily saying the same thing happened in Venezuela, but in Venezuela, most of their collapse is due to a socialist government under Maduro, and right. The United States has a long history of accepting refugees from socialist nations, whether it's from communist East Europe or the wet foot, dry foot policy that was only recently ended under Obama for Cuban refugees, or accepting hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese refugees who came over here after the end of the Vietnam War. The United States does have a long history of accepting refugees from socialist nations, and I believe that with Venezuela on the brink of essentially on the brink of collapse, we should continue that tradition.
So why is it that you think that, you know, for a long time, a lot of conservatives are usually the ones who are proponents of, you know, accepting refugees from those socialist countries that you mentioned, whether it be Cuba or China or wherever it is. Whereas with this, it doesn't seem to be anywhere near the case that it is in those other countries mentioned. Why do you think that is? That is that just like kind of like the cult of personality around the president, or is there something like fundamental and philosophical, in your opinion, that they are sort of opposed to that? Why do you think that is?
I think it's just a general shift in the Republican Party against against immigration. You know, Trump built his entire campaign around being anti illegal immigration, reducing legal immigration, and railing against you know, accepting refugees, whether they're from Syria or wherever else. And the Republican Party just shifted in that general direction because that always happens when the top official in your party goes that way. This is no longer the party of Reagan when they gave when they gave amnesty to 3 million undocumented immigrants. This isn't the party of George W. Bush, who was, you know, the whole compassionate conservatism. This is the party of a right-wing populism. And right-wing populism right now means that refugees aren't light, undocumented immigrants aren't light, and they're looking to cut legal immigration. So that's my viewpoint of why conservatives don't want refugees. It's just because it's a cult of personality around the president right now. So I don't think that will ever shift in another direction of being more accepting of refugees. I doubt that it will, at least within the next few years, as long as Trump is the top, is the representation of the Republican Party.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Do you think that this would be something that would change into something that we have seen longstanding? You know, the Republican Party has been in the past not only the pro-immigrant party, but also the anti-war party. And of course, that's shifted as of late. Do you think that that could see maybe a resurgence in the coming years, maybe not under the Trump presidency, but maybe shortly after that?
I don't know if they can necessarily. I know Trump has been skeptical of a few military interventions. I know he's called the Iraq War a disaster. He didn't support the Libyan War, and he promised to pull out of Afghanistan. But as we've seen, he's upped the U.S. presence in Afghanistan. He's gone to war with, he's increased the U.S. presence in Syria. And even though he's done some good when it comes to foreign policy, the detente with North Korea is probably, if he's able to, you know, do what he wants to do in North Korea, that's probably going to be the crowning achievement of his presidency. But I think Trump is a highly militarist person who often teeter totters when it comes to war. And even in the future, whether like someone say like someone like Rand Paul or Mike Lee or one of those two people becomes leaders in the foreign policy establishment of the GOP, we're still going to see the GOP being relatively pro-war, anti. Not necessarily anti-immigrant, but pro cuts in immigration. So, from what I see, they're probably not going to go back to being the anti-war party anytime soon.
So do you, even if we don't have necessarily an anti-war party or a pro immigrant party under the GOP, do you think that they're, because obviously as of late, and this has happened several times just within the past 10 years alone, that the Republican Party likes to splinter a lot. And of course we had the Tea Party wave, then the Tea Party even kind of splintered some more into like a social conservative wing, a libertarian wing, anti-immigrant wing, and so on and so forth. Do you think that perhaps the Republican Party would splinter even more so that way maybe not the party as a whole would become more pro-immigrant or more anti-war, things like that, but we would see more of a surge of pro-immigrant Republicans and anti-war Republicans who aren't necessarily leading the charge or aren't necessarily the biggest voice in the Republican Party, but they certainly start to appear in greater numbers within the next few years.
You know, I'm actually I really don't know about that because I do remember there was the whole debacle over the Dreamers, their whole thing, and they in the House had a discharge petition, which essentially meant that they would try to vote on a couple of bills that the GOP leadership didn't want to vote on, and a small but significant amount of Republicans, at least 20, signed on to those petitions. And they were led by relatively moderate conservatives, such as I think Carlos Coberlo was one of them. He's a GO he's a he's one of the few representatives who's been open about his support for Dreamers, open about his opposition to the president's plans for immigration. And I think he was one of the few Republicans who openly expressed opposition to the president's executive order to ban foreign nationals from, you know, the 7 countries, Trump's travel ban. And so I do think that there's room in the GOP for a relatively pro-immigration pro for relatively pro-immigration GOP because in certain districts you need to be pro-immigration in order to win. But I don't think that the general trend for the Republican Party is going to lean towards pro-immigration. You'll probably see a few Republicans be relatively pro-immigration, at least compared to the rest of their party. But I don't think you're going to see a significant amount of Republicans become pro-immigration or anti-war within the next few years.
So let's, because by the time this episode is released, we will have known what the balance of power will be like within the next 2 years at least, because the election will have already passed. But let's just say the left wins, and if they don't win for the sake of this episode, let's say they win in 2020. What would be different and what would be the same with regards to not just Venezuela, but also the broader sense of immigration and refugee policies? Do you think there would be that much different? Because even under President Obama, it wasn't like we had completely open borders under President Obama, as I'm sure you know. It was actually very restrictive. Do you think that would be sort of the way that the left would return to, or do you think they would actually be a little bit more reasonable with regards to immigration?
So when it comes to the left, you know, you've obviously heard the chants abolish ICE, open borders at a lot of protest rallies, but the candidates running themselves, like for example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to doesn't want to abolish ICE, she wants to reform ICE, or I think that's what she wants. You know, other I could be don't quote me on that. Might want to abolish ICE and then replace it with another immigration agency, but she doesn't want open borders. Neither does
Yeah,
Nancy. Neither
right.
does.
And that's the thing with the party that is, supposedly the big government party is that when it comes down to it, the ideologies take a back seat. And this is the case with the Republican Party as well, but the ideologies, take the back seat to how can we expand government more.
So, for me, I think the Democratic Party is probably going to focus on being, it's going to still be reactionary to whatever President Trump is. So let's say they win in 2018, they're, let's say they take majority of the House, majority of the Senate. They're still not going to be able to impeach Trump because you need two thirds in the House, in the you need two thirds in the House, I think, in order to get impeachment charges leveled, and then it has to be voted on by the Senate. And there's no way that, unless it's a complete collapse of the Republican Party in every way, shape, or form in the midterms, they're not going to have the numbers to impeach Trump. So they're probably just going to try and block everything that Trump wants to get through. So whether that's, you know, let's say it's tax reform, there's going to be no tax reform. Say that's deregulation, there's going to be no mass deregulations. But they're probably going to go along with some of his foreign policy initiatives, whether that's funding the war in Afghanistan, or continuing funding for wars in Syria, continuing funding the U.S. military. That part of Washington's not going to change. We've seen that with the spending bills that have appeared in the last few months or in the last couple of years, where Trump just signs on the omnibus. You know, he decries it, but he still signs it after it's voted on by a bipartisan majority. So spending is probably not going to change. Being opposed to pretty much anything Trump tries to do that he wants to do is probably not going to change. In the future for the Democratic Party, they're not going to be necessarily open borders, because that would mean that they would have to adopt the Libertarian Party position on it, which is that the state shouldn't have control over borders, because borders are they're not private property.
Right, and they're obviously not going to do that.
Yeah, and so you'll probably, if they do win, let's say they win the presidency in 2020 and they win both the House and the Senate, for scenario's sake, I think what they'll probably do is they might keep immigration at the same level. You know, they'll probably try to legalize Dreamers, give a pathway to citizenship for the 11 to 15 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States, or if, barring Republican opposition, they might say pathway to legal status. Because we know that there's no way Trump's going to be able to deport 11 to 15 million people within the next two to 8 years.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, as we start to sort of wind down a little bit, tell me, what is it that you think is the best case scenario that we can get, the best case and the worst case? I kind of assume what the worst case is in your mind, but the best and the worst case with regards to Venezuelan refugees and what's the most likely situation that we can get out of them?
I think the best case is that the refugee crisis starts to die down, Venezuela starts to return to a sense of stability and starts to recover economically. The United States also accepts any refugees that want to come to the United States, whether that's paid for by taxpayer dollars or paid for by private hands. Ideally, it would be there would be legislation that would allow for private citizens and private groups to sponsor refugees to come to the United States like they do in Canada. Worst case scenario, the refugee crisis gets worse. Venezuela collapses. There's no civil administration, and Trump decides to invade and impose. U.S. Decides to invade Venezuela to, you know, quote unquote, stabilize the country, and then we get bogged down in another war that lasts for 15 years and doesn't solve anything.
And which one of those do you think we're more likely to head toward?
Probably somewhere in the middle. The United States will probably continue to send humanitarian aid to the region to help deal with the refugee crisis. The refugee crisis will probably get worse, and countries such as Colombia and Brazil and all the different Latin American countries will probably continue to try and solve the crisis on their own. There will probably be no U.S. invasion of Venezuela. I know Trump has floated it many times, but I doubt that he'll be able to actually do so when some problems across the world.
Right.
And Maduro's regime will probably stay in power, and the situation in Venezuela will continue to get worse and worse and worse until something catastrophic happens.
Which one do you think would happen first, a revolution of sorts, or rebellion, or the sort of opposite end of that, where we get Pol Pot or Stalin or a situation that's similar to that.
I don't necessarily think it's going to be either.
Okay.
A revolution is probably not going to happen. I know there's a lot of large-scale protests and everything, but Maduro is probably not going to go testing to the point where he's going to have a revolution in the streets. And I don't think he's going to strive to, bring back the killing field and send in and mass starvate and mass and creating a man-made famine that kills half of his people, like what ha that kills a lot of his people. I think it's just going to be a continuing trend of just bad things, but it's probably not going to go off to one extreme or the other. Hope I'm not a seer, so I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. And I hope the situation, and I hope the whole crisis is resolved without any extremes happening and without any more people dying, but I don't know how the situation will be resolved.
As we start to close down here, where can, of course, we're going to link this article into our show notes so that people get the chance to read it and look over it. But where can people find you on social media, and where can people find your work?
So they can find my work on youngvoices.com/advocates. You'll find my name there among the 60. I think it's about 60 Young Voice contributors. They're all great writers. They're all great people. So I encourage them. So I encourage anyone who's listening to read other Young Voices contributors. They're great people and they're good at what they do. You can find me on Twitter at Elias_Atienza, and yeah, that's me.
All right. Well, Elias, I really appreciate you coming on the program today, and we will be sure to get this out and try to get some attention towards your article as much as possible.
Thank you very much.
All right, and for everyone else, please be sure to follow me at Caleb Franz on Twitter. Be sure to follow the show at MLiberty on Twitter. Follow the MLiberty Initiative at MLiberty.org as well. And subscribe to us on iTunes so that you'll never miss an episode or an update. And until next week, we'll see you.